Tu me savais bien, à sa fusillade, que
our guests, also very warm welcome to Cape Town. The weather is not as hot as it is in other areas, and the rain has all gone to Joburg and other places in Durban. So welcome to this beautiful Cape. Sorry, no? It was not by design. You are so excited. Okay.
That tasting of power, however ephemeral, would have been so good.
I know. Okay. Sir, are you ready to kick off? Please go ahead.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks, members of the portfolio committee. My name is David Power. I'm currently the CEO of the Timishana Trust. And with me is Adri Elma Omadi was until recently the acting chief financial officer. She's moving on to other federal responsibilities. Next to her is Mr. Duncan Dugande, who's the incoming CFO. And next to him is Vusis Kosana, who is a national tooling coordinator. And from our board of trustees is Mr. Imran Patel, who's also an official within the Department of Science and Technology. Thanks.
We received this, I take it this is your presentation that you're going to give us.
Yes.
Thanks for sending it to us in advance. Please go ahead.
Honorable Chair, once again I have the distinct privilege to present to the Portfolio Committee the annual report for financial year 2006-2007. I'll do 80% of the presentation and my colleagues will finish off with the audited financial statements. The presentation, I'll just go over what Timishana does, how do we justify our existence, and what is our envisaged leadership position as articulated in our strategic intent, and just an overview of our centers across the country, and an overview of our performance from financial year 2006-2007, and as I mentioned, my colleagues will finish off with the audited financial statements. Timishana, as I said at Nozia, is the vendor work, which means cooperation or partnership. And it's in that vein that the Department of Science and Technology set up technology stations, our technology transfer centers across South Africa, focusing on the original concept was at the University of Technologies. But then now we've made a quantum leap and focusing on the traditional universities. And the reason why we set this thing up is to have a way to support SMEs in South Africa in areas of national priority in terms of their competitiveness, production of world-class products and technologies. The focus on SMEs is not unique to South Africa. Central to economic competitiveness in the OECD countries and in the emerging economies is on the competitiveness of high-growth SMEs. So we do this by setting up world-class technology facilities at our universities so that they can have enhanced capacity to improve their innovations. And within the participating universities, we see that there's going to be an improved and enriched R&D. The development of regional systems of innovations worldwide is focusing on the role of universities in those regions to enhance the region's competitiveness. And we believe that By the universities engaging SMEs, they in turn will have a better understanding of SME needs in their regions and hence improve their competitiveness. The slide shows just Timishana's strategic intent. And inside of our resource constraint, Timishana is always boxed above its weight. We are of the opinion that we can only be judged by having a national presence in every single province in the country. So the following chapter is just an overview of our technology stations across the country. We are focusing on almost any area which is envisaged as a national priority. We have at least three technology stations in agri-food processing. One is here in the Western Cape. The other one, which we just brought out, is at the University of Limpopo. We are also focusing on the chemical industry. We are looking at downstream chemical opportunities. We have three centers. One is at the Tshwane University of Technology and situated at the Harangua campus. We have also a center of excellence in downstream chemicals at the Northern Mandela Metropolitan University, which is situated in Port Elizabeth. We also have a technology station in downstream chemicals situated at Mango City Technical in Umulazi. We are also focusing on the clothing and textile technology, and this technology station is also in your neck of the woods in Belleville. One of the key centers and the flagship program within Tshumisano is in automotive components at the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. We have also a technology station in Central University of Technology in Bloemfontein. And we are also focusing on molded and reinforced plastics, metal casting and foundry technology at the University of Johannesburg. And also we have a center in electronics. As the slides highlight that we have a near perfect footprint across the country, but obviously we can do much more. And we had the privilege of receiving funding and rolling out three institutes for advanced tooling to try to curtail the decrease in the skills base in this country. Tooling is a critical input in mining, in automotive and other things, but unfortunately there's been an erosion of skills. The average age of a toolmaker in South Africa is 6 years old. This has implications for our capacity to manufacture goods and services. At the moment, the tooling industry imports about 5 billion rand worth of tools for the automotive industry. As you can imagine, it has dire consequences for our balance of payments. So we are of the opinion that these three centers, one is situated at Tshwane University of Technology in Soshanguve, the other one at the Walter Sisulu University in East London, and also here in Stellenbosch. And they focus on key inputs which are necessary for the tooling industry. In tool design, tooling technology transfer for SMEs, and also in research and innovation. This is at the University of Stellenbosch. As I just mentioned, that without a tooling industry, we don't have a manufacturing base. That is non-negotiable. So the aim of this Institute for Advanced Tooling is to focus on the production, on the proper design, production, and recycling of tools for the industries that I've just mentioned. And then we believe that this enhances economic growth, because what it does is we can design and formulate curricula which is specific for this critical industry in terms of soft skills. This refers to designers, tool makers, and IT. And at the end of the day, competitiveness is informed by your capacity to produce world-class products. And we believe that the capacity to design tools will go a long way in us manufacturing world-class products and services. So the following slides, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, just to give an overview of what Tshumisano has done with taxpayers' money in the past financial year. The following table just shows Tshumisano's technology development initiatives with SMEs across the country. And what we did was just to highlight all the technology stations which were in operation in the past financial year, and then show what has happened in terms of their impact on technology over the years. As you can imagine, there's been an exponential increase in the number and quality of SMEs we have in terms of technology. But has over the past 3 to 4 years, we have all over 3,000 SMEs across the country. Of specific importance is our activities in downstream chemicals. The new technology station opened in the financial year 2005-2006. Last year alone, they managed to assist well over 408 SMEs. This is quite significant, especially against the background of the industrial policy framework which was received by the Department of Trade and Industry, which highlights the importance of processing in the downstream industry. Along with technology diffusion, you have to focus on training and skills development initiatives in line with government imperatives. And the following slides highlight some of our activities. I've deliberately highlighted technology stations where there was no activities, and some of the reasons are important to highlight. As for some of the technology stations, although in the past they have focused on skills development, where they either trained staff from SMEs in new products or processes and stuff, they have to strike a delicate balance between their technology focus and their training initiatives. Because of constraints on the floor, if they get a lot of requests from SMEs, they find that their initiatives to focus on skills development is curtailed. It's not a good thing, but on the other hand, is counterbalanced by the technology activities. I've highlighted reinforced and molded plastics and the automotive components. These are our flagship stations. And one of the challenges they face over and above the upswing in the number of technology requests, development requests, is that the institutional framework more often than not prohibits them from engaging in skills development, because it's a nice area to get revenue and then to reinvest in the system. But the university in which they are based, they want a cut of the action. Like, if you are going to do skills development on our campus, we need to get a little bit. So they find that the biggest source of revenue for them, in line with our request for sustainability, is on technology development. But in the past financial year, well over 152 SME-oriented training sessions at our technology stations was done. We are barely scratching the surface. We believe that we can do much better than we have done. So as you can see, there's actually a direct correlation. As the number of SME development initiatives in terms of technology has gone up in the previous slide, the number of SME training services have declined. And it has to do with, I think it, in a way, it adversely highlights the importance of Chimichano for SME development. But on the other side, that we have to strike a delicate balance between technology transfer and skills development. The following slide, Honorable Chair, highlights what I think is one of the most important things, at least from the funding that we get from the Department of Science and Technology. We have an internship program, and what the slide highlights is the distribution of our interns. The interns are placed either at our technology stations at the universities, or in some specific cases, the interns are placed on the SME floor. We are of the opinion that absorptive capacity of the SMEs can only be enhanced by the requisite skills. So some of the interns are unemployed, but we give them 1 year internships, and we have enviable problems in terms of our interns, because more often than not, they don't spend the whole year, they are absorbed by industry. So it seems for some reason that we are doing the right thing, because the interns get exposure to industrial projects, and the industry decides to absorb them more often than not. Obviously, the program can only expand. At the moment, the total expenditure and the number of SMEs that we have is about 87 across the country. So the following, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, just something exercise on our part, just to highlight some of the projects. But the selection of the projects was just, again, to reinforce our alignment with the industrial policy framework within government. For example, the first slide shows the opening of a technology platform at one of our at a BE company in Port Elizabeth. They manufacture products for Daimler. Daimler now is no longer Daimler Chrysler, and they export the products. But one of the key challenges they face is Daimler told them that they are not going to accept any more hand welded products. So we had to along with the management of the BE company, set up a technology platform, a robotic arm, basically, to enable them to produce it. What has happened is it did lead to actually attrition of employment. The employees who used to do the hand welding were moved to another section, productivity improved, and there was also a skills upgrade. And then this basically enhanced the competitiveness of the company. If this was not done, they could have lost the contract from Daimler, and Daimler could have gotten some of the parts from other countries in the world. The following initiative is it has to do with the development of a evacuation nut shell. Most African countries, including South Africa, produce a lot of cashew nuts, but we export them to India in huge tonnages because we don't have a cost-effective way of actually processing the cashew nuts. So our technology station in automotive components is currently designing and developing an expensive product better than what you can find in the market, with the belief that it has an export potential to other countries in the SADC region. This will also help internally in South Africa because in terms of job creation, we need to focus on labor-intensive industries. And in this case, we have the opinion that this project will actually help South Africa to do some in-house processing of the cashew nuts rather than exporting the cashew nuts to India and other countries. The following slide just highlights what we are doing in terms of the downstream chemicals industry. We are doing some cutting edge work in biodiesel production rather than the manufacture of biodiesel. We are focusing on things like better ways to process it on small scales for farmers and for emerging entrepreneurs. And then we're looking at ways where we can also process some of the waste rather so that you have a much better product and much better margins in terms of the processing of biodiesel. We're also looking at a key issue in this country and around the developing world where we're looking at new waste treatment products and processing. Obviously, the issue of clean water is a national imperative. We are currently involved, one of our organizations is involved with Petro SA. Petro SA has seen a huge opportunity for them to get involved in low-order hydrocarbon solvent markets. This is used in paintings and other things, and we found that we can have a leadership position in this kind of technology. And then we are also doing a lot of collaborative projects with CEDA within the DTI, with ChemCity, within Sasol, and how the economic propeller to assist black and female-owned SMEs to produce high-quality consumer goods in terms of shampoos, in terms of hair products, and those kind of things. The last slide focuses on our activities in the clothing and textile area. In terms of economic development, our administration in Belleville has engaged community women action to help them in terms of manufacturing luminous jackets which are used in construction. And the ladies, the company which the community women action forum form, have got a contract with Lafarge Construction, which is a listed South African company. So the technology station has actually assisted them not just in terms of how to make the product, but in terms of quality assurance and other important activities. And one of the inputs from them was to help Pindilu Swazi, who manufactures some high quality clothing products to secure some tenders within the Eastern Cape government. And one of the other highlights is a company called Isabco, which manufacture products and export them into the U.S. market. Some of their products have the Addis brand, which is quite familiar for people who have to store food overnight. And they've secured a huge order based on the test reports and analysis from our technology station in clothing and textile. And the transition from clothing and textiles to automotive is actually illustrated by our activities with TWR, which manufacture a safety belt. And some of the safety belts and bags are going to be used in the new series Mercedes-Benz. So the whole transition from clothing and textile to a very important industrial base is actually supported by this activity. Honorable members, we also had the privilege to host the first All Africa Technology Diffusion Conference, one of our activities from last year, and it attracted about 305 delegates from across the African countries and also in Europe and the US, and about 90 papers were published, and there were about 11 African countries represented at this conference. This was quite important because it served to highlight, not just to South African authorities, but then to other countries, the importance, the critical importance universities of technology or universities for that matter should play in the developmental phase of any society. The following honorable chairperson shows that Chimichanga is we are assured that we have to leverage what we have, but then also avoid duplications across the entities. We have a long-standing MOA with the IGC, with the South African Bureau of Standards, and with CEDA, where, for example, last year we've managed to secure about 1.7 million rand worth of project funding from CEDA to help SMEs across the country. The last slide I have, Honorable Chairperson, is just some of the challenges and opportunities to Chimichanga face. The first one, obviously, which is something which is very close to my heart, is that we have to establish and maintain a footprint in all the provinces in the country, including the underserved provinces. There is a mismatch between the services demanded by SMEs relative to the trust capacity to supply adequate interventions. We operate on a tight budget, and also it's just an issue of where do we position technology within the South African mindset. And there is a mismatch which we'll try to address. There's still some, especially some in the society, there's still some conservative view about government involvement in private sector. We still have some resistance in that regard. And the last issue which is a national interest is we have to increase the criticalness of black and female owned enterprises which are assisted by the trust. Honorable Chairperson, I'll hand over to my colleagues to give us an overview of the findings.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I just want to give you a quick overview of the balance sheet, the income statement, and the cash flow of Chimichanga, and then work a little bit of further explanations on that. You will note that Chimichanga's property, plant, and equipment and intangible assets have grown, doubled more or less within this year. However, you must note that this assets are only the assets of the project management unit, because all equipment that's bought by the stations become the property of the hosting institution or university as soon as that is bought. Then you can just have a look. Our short-term investments has greatly decreased due to the fact that a lot of expenditure activities have happened in this year. And then if you look at the equity and liabilities, accumulative funds from the previous years come over, and then we've got deferred grants of funds that were already committed and approved by DST to be transferred to this financial year, coming to more or less 5.8 million, and then the other is just the trade and other payables of 1.3. Our income statement again will show that how the activities of Chimichanga has increased within this financial year. Payments to our technology stations, project payments of other projects. Our staff expenditure has increased due to the fact of the growth of our project management unit. And then we come to our deficit of 3.7 million. Just as an explanation that if we take the 3.7 million and we add the committed funds of DST, the approved by DST, we will come to 2 million, which is more or less the surplus that Chimichanga is sitting with. The cash flow statement, you will see that I just want to show that we come to our cash equivalent of 9 million, which will be explained now in the next slide. Our balance, as per our cash flow statement, is 9.1 million, of which, if we deduct our committed funds of Chimichanga, which was approved by DST, of 5.8 million, of that funds, we are talking about the Institute of Advanced Tooling, that funds were committed of just over 3 million. Our new station, Limpopo, in Limpopo, we've also had committed funds that were transferred to the new financial year of 2.4 million. Indo-German, just over 300, and then other that was not from DST of 32,000. And then our accrued expenditure is 1.3, and again we come to the total of just over 2 million. This just gives a better explanation of our actual income and expenditure for this financial year. Our greatest expenditure is obviously our technology stations program, where 24 million was spent. Our new station, as mentioned, we've received 4 million. We only spent 1.5 or just under 1.6 due to the fact that the grant agreement was only signed at the end of that financial year. But the 2.4 has subsequently been spent within our first quarter of this new financial year. Our IIT, Institute for Advanced Tooling, 15.8 million has been was the income, 12.8 was spent. The 3 million that you see there, some of that funding comes from the provincial government of Western Cape, which has committed funds for a project that runs over 3 years. Therefore, the funding has to run, be carried over for another 2 years. That is the total of the total MTF budget and how we spent that. Then we also had, as was reported already, the All Africa Conference. Because of it being our first All Africa, we didn't really have a baseline to work from. And the expected number of participants were way more than what we planned. And therefore you will see that we have overspent, but at least now we've got a baseline to work from for the next time when we have All Africa. Other small projects, the only amount that other small projects have been completed, the only amount that you see left is the over 300, which is the Indo-German tool room. The Indo-German tool room feeds into the Institute for Advanced Tooling. That is the program where we send some of our people over to India, and they get trained, come back, and they will feed them into the Institute for Advanced Tooling. For that funding has been committed this year for trips to and from India. CEDA assistance, as was reported, the funding was partly spent. Our PMU expenditure has increased due to two factors. The one was that the project management unit has greatly the staff component has greatly increased, and also due to that fact, we had to move from premises to the innovation hub. These were expenditure then that was presented to our board before expenditure and which was then approved by the board. So again, you will see that we come to the 2 million, which falls into the 4 over and 5 over or under expenditure ratio. In percentage-wise, just to give you an idea of how funds have been spent this year, 50% of our funding has been spent on our technology stations program. That is the 12 technology stations that we've got. The way that it's spent is it's transferred to them in operational funds, major projects, and major equipment. Our ring-fence grant that we've received from DST is the Institute for Advanced Tooling, which consists of more or less 25% of the expenditure of Tumisana. Our internship program, 6%. All the other small projects consisted of more or less 10% of the expenditure of Tumisana. And then you will see that although we've overspent, we're still way below the more or less the norm of 15 to 20% of expenditure, management expenditure, which came to 9% for operational and admin expenditure of the project management unit. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We are going to move to the next presentation, but before we do that, what is the story you're telling us on finances?
The things of activities are increasing.
Press that, we're recording you.
Activities are increasing, and I think that specifically with Tumisana, the Technology Stations Program, you can see that we are well on our way. with the IAT, because it's such a young program still, it still needs a little bit of time to come on its feet. And then because of our internship program, which is another call of grant funding that was given, that one we see as truly a great success. Therefore, we've requested additional funding for that, because we see that that's a great opportunity for us to improve and increase the employability of the students at the universities of technology.
Because you are leaving, has that been stressful or exciting for you?
I'm not leaving.
I'm
no,
sure that
far
you're
from
going,
leaving.
You're going to new pastures.
No.
I'm sorry, Honorable Chairperson. I'm just saying that she's going to focus more on the strategic policy and risk issues within. Not to say that finance are much less exciting profession, but she's going to focus on policy and alignment with DST in terms of what we do with taxpayers' money. So she's it's a lateral difference within the organization.
Oh, a promotion? Demotion? No, I'm actually wanting others to go and share their things whilst we're waiting. Oh, are you ready there where you are? You must set your staff whilst we're still chatting.
No, I think it's a promotion. That's she probably was born with a policy in her hand, so it's an avenue, and she has established a phenomenal rapport with the GST and others. So I think that will be very important, because it will keep the GST in the loop in terms of where Chung Channel is going. And I think it's something that she wants to focus on.
When under the power, are you excited with what's happening with Chung Channel, or are you having sleepless nights sometimes?
I have sleepless nights because we can do much better. And that is the reflection on our academic institutions. I'm of opinion, and this is my opinion, that they have to realign their activities to serve the needs of the developmental phase. Because there's nothing wrong with research and development, but they have to be always when we focus on near market technologies to assist our SMEs. And this is not unique to South Africa. Even advanced countries have recognized the need for SMEs. And also alignment with other government departments is going to be important for us. We can do much better.
Thank you, sir. Members, I know that you are ready to go. Just wait until ASAP is done, and then we'll take both of them. Tata. You just must press the button there, introduce yourself and your team, and then get going.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bola Maki. I'm the Chief Operations Officer of the Academy of Science. And I'm with Professor Givas, the Executive Officer of the Academy. So he will have a large chunk of the presentation as the Executive Officer. And we will share the presentation, and I'll take a smaller slide as a Chief Operations Officer. So I will hand over to him to kickstart the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. Good morning. As Dr. Marty has said, it's just the two of us here today, and I apologize for that. Professor Robin Crewe is our president and would normally be here to present the annual report. Unfortunately, he is a vice principal of the University of Pretoria, and at the moment they're in the throes of an enormous amount of academic activity, so he's unable to come and send his apologies. I'm also sorry that Mr. Morakeng Malachi, who is our part-time finance officer, because of pressure of his other commitments, is unable to be here. So it's just the two of us, the chief operations officer and the CEO, who will present the report. The report was circulated, I believe, to all of you, and you should have this, and obviously we have selected from that report what we will include in our presentation, but we'll be very happy to take questions and discussion on any part of the annual report as printed and distributed to you. If I could have the first slide, Chairperson, it's a particular pleasure for us to meet with you as in your first time that you are Chairperson. And we just want to make quite sure that the place of the Academy, the niche of the Academy of Science of South Africa, is to have in this country a national scholarly academy. I'd like to emphasize that we are highly multidisciplinary. More than a third of our current members are from the social, human, economic, and legal sciences. So therefore, this is not exclusively natural sciences, although a majority of the members are from science and natural science and engineering. But the strength of a national science academy for this country is that we have a self-perpetuating, merit-based membership, which is highly multidisciplinary and represents scholarship in all areas across the whole country, from all groups. That it is, while it is independent of government as an organization, as in all countries that have national science academies, it works closely with government and constructively and accepts funds from government to do its work, much of its work, not all, but much of its work, and that then is done in the country's interest, and government can look at the reports, and we'll get some examples later, accept the recommendations or reject them, but they have been very carefully put together without any vested interest. And you will see that we have mechanisms for ensuring that our reports are independently generated. That we can represent in the country a credible, multidisciplinary voice of science on topics of national importance and interest, and that we are linked through our membership of 96 national science academies in very many countries. We can draw on their expertise, we can work with them, we can use their reports, we can make sure that they are also applied in this country. Next slide, please. Now, in general, the objectives of our young National Science Academy, I'd like every member to know that this is only, it's only 6 years since Parliament passed the statute of the Water, which established this as a statutory organization in South Africa, the only National Science Academy, the only one recognized by government and only recognized internationally, that we work very much on ensuring that every problem we look at is examined from all perspectives. Not only from engineering, not only from physics, but is looked at by social scientists, by economic scientists, feasibility, etc. That we try to promote innovative and independent scientific thinking for the country's interest, and included in this the optimum development of intellectual capacity of all the citizens. I will emphasize later that recently, and I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Sekhapelo, who is the group executive in the Department of Science and Technology with whom we work directly. And I want to say that the first slide you saw is the Department of Science and Technology in Pretoria, and we are fortunate that the department offered us space in one of its wings, together with Mackie, with which we work very closely. And therefore, we have a project which has been developed, which will have very much the theme of the human capital being developed at all levels, but particularly at the postgraduate level. And that we want to provide effective advice and facilitate appropriate action on that advice. And as mentioned before, we link South Africa with other national, international science academies. Next slide, please. Now, Chairperson, we are a very young organization relative to the organizations that you've been listening to in the science and technology group, like the CSIR and the NRF, for example, the HSRC. And therefore, we have been building our capacity very strongly in the last few years, and we now are particularly keen on these four priorities that have been defined and agreed with the Minister Manyena and also with the department, which is that we want to widen the scope of our interactions with the potential commissioners of our studies. For example, departments of health, departments of agriculture, department of communication, department of education, as well as obviously the Department of Science and Technology, who we think should be encouraged to consider the academy where they have serious problems that need an evidence-based examination, to look to the academy to carry out that study, to work with NAHI and bring advice back to government and cabinet. So therefore, we're particularly keen at the moment to make sure that every department knows that the academy is able and willing to carry out commissioned studies. In the United States of America, the U.S. National Academies carries out over 200 such studies every year, and they are commissioned, 90% are commissioned by governments, departments, or agencies, either the executive, the legislature, or the judicial branch of government. And so that is a high focus for us. Obviously, we initiate some studies ourselves when the membership and the council thinks that the problem is a sufficiently serious one and we haven't been asked to do it. And you'll see an example of that later. But this is very important for us. The second is, Chairperson and Honourable Members, is that the reason that we can compete in doing these studies compared with the traditional use of consultants is that our work is done at cost. There is no fee, and no member of a panel or committee gets anything other than compensation for expenditures that have actually been incurred. So therefore, this is volunteer work. However, you can imagine that with very busy people that we have to draw into this work, they either have to think that it's worth doing because it's important, or we have to be as user-friendly as possible, so that when meetings are arranged, that everything is done to make it as easy as possible to make their contributions. So our logistic infrastructure, for which Dr. Marty is responsible, has to ensure that when somebody who's a busy professor of engineering in Itikwini or some place away from our natural base in Gauteng, that travel and that working support, logistic support, is absolutely top class. So we want to make sure that we can maintain that basic model of volunteer service, because that is what distinguishes academies. The cost of a study done by the academy is usually a half to a third to a quarter of what it would cost if you use consultants, plus the removal of the vested interests and all the other complications of using profit-making consultants. The third is that 2 years ago, or in early 2006, we presented this to the committee at its last meeting last year. We reported on our detailed investigation of the publishing of scholarly work, scientific work in South Africa and from South Africa. This was a 200-page report which examined all the statistics, all the evidence, and made 10 recommendations which have been discussed with the Department of Science and Technology, Department of Education, Higher Education South Africa, Council on Higher Education, and where we are now busy having established a committee on scholarly publishing in South Africa, and Dr. Marty will report on that a bit later, in order to carry out these, in order to give a quantum jump for South Africa's scholarly quality, production, and volume of work. So that's a high priority. And then we have, as members of this committee who've been members before will know, we publish the magazine Quest Science for South Africa, and again, one of our priorities is to massify, to increase by a factor of 10 or maybe 100 the exposure of our young people to that magazine so that they can be inspired by the work that's done in South Africa. It only reports South African research of the highest level and supports it in a readable, simple way so that learners at schools, learners can benefit from this. Chairperson, our programs in our budget are divided into four: the administration and internal infrastructure, secondly, this major project on scholarly publishing in South Africa, thirdly, our international academy relations designed to bring to South Africa the benefits of all the academies on the globe, and then fourthly, national and regional activities. We are a national organization. We try to have public lectures in different regions. We draw our membership from all over the country. But our national programs are mainly our projects designed to address problems in South Africa. Next slide. The council of the academy has a two-year term. This is the membership at the moment with its various office bearers. The council will note with respect to our finance report later that we have formed a finance group to advise council, and Professor Sunil Maharaj is the chair of that group. And this enables us to examine our budgets and our expenditures and our financial reports and for council to be well informed before the annual financial statements are drawn up. And then I just want to present, this previous slide, the membership of the Academy. Just the next one, please, Dr. Marty. The membership of the Academy, as I mentioned earlier, is drawn from across the country, across the disciplines, and the Academy is very concerned with representativity of high-quality people in the major disciplines. If you look at this, you'll see that in the economic sciences, in the mathematical sciences, educational sciences, and earth sciences, we have fewer members than we have in the, for example, humanities, the life sciences, which includes health, and in physical and technological sciences, social sciences. So therefore, every year when we carry out our election, we invite the existing members please to nominate top scholars, top scientists and technologists from the disciplines in which we have fewer members than we need. Secondly, we are very pleased about Vice Chancellor. We are very keen to have as many women members. We have a very strong emphasis on recruiting and nominating and electing women members, as well as black members. And in this year's election, which has just been processed, we are again adding significantly to those two columns. So altogether, Chairperson and Honourable Members, there are 276 members, which will increase to 294 after this present election has just been completed. Next slide. I'd like to hand over now to Dr. Marty, briefly to describe our work in these other areas before I come back to the final section. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. And just to pick up on the programs, as Professor Givas already reported that we actually have four major programs. We reported on the first program. I'll quickly report on program two, and the scholarly publishing in South Africa program. And he also highlighted the report that was published, commissioned by the DSC and on scholarly publishing in South Africa. And mainly with the overall aim of strengthening research publishing in the country. And indigenous publishing across all disciplines, so that our journals and books and conference proceedings that are accredited by the Department of Education are of high quality standards. So one of the recommendations that were actually made, there were 10 recommendations, was precisely to do exactly that, to strengthen and indigenous journals through a process of peer review, quality assurance, and also making sure that the journals, which are really publicly funded, funded twice, you know, for that matter, which is an input-driven funding through the Department of Education, funding that is actually given to institutions, and output-driven funding through the GST and also via the NRF and the research funding to institutions to for research publishing in the country, which includes mainly journals, books, scholarly books. So the 10 recommendations are being driven, the implementation of the recommendation is being driven by the academy and working closely with institutions like the NRF, CHE, and other institutions in the country that are stakeholders, that have got a direct interest on ensuring that we produce a good quality publications in the country, and also it's accessible because it's publicly funded research. So we want to also ensure that it's accessible, it's easily accessible, it's openly accessible, you know, and so open access journal, for instance, but because the rippling effect is that because they are openly accessible, therefore quality automatically becomes guaranteed, because nobody wants to publish a journal or research that goes there out there in the internet and seen by the whole world if it's not a good quality publication. Hence the need to make sure that they are openly accessible. A part of this scholarly publishing, of course, is Quest, which is the quarterly the journal of the academy, which is geared towards promoting science, particularly amongst the learners and the youth, to develop interest in science, give them exposure to good quality science, which has been written by the top academics in the country, but of course communicated in a language that the youth and the scholars can understand at their level, and also targeted at science events. For instance, this publication, because it was an August publication, so the focus was women and science. So every publication we normally produce, it's always targeted to ensure that it's in line with the national science event. Of course, the other publication of the Academy is the South African Journal of Science, which is ranked 18th of the 44 multidisciplinary journals internationally. So as much as we actually also want to strengthen the journals that can be able to make it internationally and be accepted in the IFI, International Ranking System of the Journals. But we also want to strengthen local journals, because not all the journals can be able to make it internationally, but they have to adhere to a national standard, as much as those that are internationally accredited have got to adhere to an international standard. So the focus of the Academy, through this report and with the 10 recommendations, is to make sure that those journals that can make it internationally are able to, we need to set up a national a standard, which is actually through a consensus. We have actually set up a forum of editors of the journals that are published in the country. And recently, sometime during this year, we actually had a conference where we invited all the editors. There's 220 journals that are accredited in the country. So most of them, the editors attended this meeting to ensure that when we implement these recommendations, they are very much on board. Now the other program, Program 3, the International Relations Program. As Professor Givers also mentioned that the Academy of Science of South Africa is a member of the 96 academies in the world. There's about 90, so which form the body called IAP and ISC, which is hosted by TWAS in Trieste, Italy. And we also a member of the Inter-Academy panel, the medical panel. And we also a member of the International Human Rights. And also we a member of the network of African academies. Actually, AFAF is the vice president of the network of African Academy of Science. And of course, we are part of the Academy was fortunate enough to get a funding grant from the U.S. National Academies via the Gates Foundation, which was geared towards strengthening African academies. So the Academy of Science of South Africa and Nigeria and Uganda were the three academies that were selected as the flagship to ensure that, you know, and they can be able to roll out the process of strengthening academies, African academies in Africa. So these are the three academies that were actually targeted for initial funding. And of course, we offer 12 Young Scientists Award. So now one of the funding grants we actually received from the Inter-Academy panel was to produce this IAP Water program conference proceedings, where we assembled top academics in Africa in the area of water and health. We organized a regional workshop where the African academies, you know, had to share the expertise on what at country level they were actually doing in terms of water and health as the focus of one of the projects funded by the IAP. And of course, another 12 GSD and AFSAF funded project is the award, the annual award, which is called 12 GSD AFSAF Young Scientist Award. It's also part of this membership of TWAS. So on, this is an annual event where we recognize, you know, leading scholars, young, of course, young in the sense that they are under, they should be under 40 years of age. And of course, as mentioned, that we members of the Inter-Academy medical panel. So we're represented by one of our members, who's the president of the and CEO of MRC, Professor Anthony Mbeu. So he represents the academy and is also the co-chair of the Inter-Academy the medical panel. And also one of our members, who's the council member and president of the academy, Professor Peter Bay, represents the academy also at the International Human Rights Network of Academies. And now this is the first meeting of this African Academy Collaboration Conference, which is usually held every year, hosted by each of the seven academies. Of course, the number has grown now from 7 to 13. So the first AFSADI conference was hosted by the Kenya Academy of Science. The second one was last year, which was hosted by the Cameroon Academy of Science. The next one is this year, and in about a week's time, is going to be hosted by the Senegalese Academy of Science. Now, this is a part of the funding initially mentioned through the U.S. National Academies, and which is geared towards strengthening African academies, capacity for African academies. So now one of the spin-offs here is that every year the academies, they get an opportunity to learn and share, you know, the work they're doing as academies, but also there's usually a conference around a particular theme. Now the theme this year is water and health. And we normally choose the theme around the MDGs to make sure that you know, the African academies and part of the advice they give to their countries, respective countries, through the expertise of their membership, is to ensure that they help their government to deliver towards programs geared towards poverty alleviation in Africa. Of course, this is program four, but of course it's part of the what the academy normally does is to recognize excellence, awards gold medals to lifetime achievement. To members who have excelled over the years. So once a year we select through our members two leading scholars consistently who have actually and who have made outstanding achievements, and we give them gold medal awards. And of course, there is another award, of course, to the up-and-coming students, scholars, which is named after, of course, it's an award which was given to the academy. by the Sydney Brenner, one of the South African Nobel Prize laureates in 2002. So that now this fellowship is co-awarded to the Academy of Science of South Africa in the U.S. National Academies, and with additional funding, of course, from the Oppenheimer Memorial Trust. So, and each year we recognize two leading scholars. And in this year, the two leading scholars is Zander Woodman and Shaheen Muller, who have scooped a big league Sydney Brenner Fellowship for their groundbreaking work in HIV and cancer research at the University of Cape Town. So, maybe let me end there and hand over to Professor Givers to continue, particularly with the focus now on the studies that the Academy undertakes, which is Program 4, Commission Studies. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I just want to indicate that you will see that the Academy, a young Academy, has established what are typical of academies worldwide, namely the honorific function, to honor, to incentivize high achievement in the country, both young and more established scholars. However, this academy would not have been started for that purpose alone. Our purpose is science for society. So what I will now continue with is the activity which is becoming typical of national science academies worldwide. It is the modern role of such academies to build on the honour and the merits of their members and to do national service in the sense of having studies done which are very careful, looking at evidence and making recommendations that are useful. Now, there are two ways in which we do this. And we have been mentored by this project of the African Science Academies. And the first is exemplified by what you see here. The Department of Science and Technology asked us in 2005 to look very carefully at the new national missions in the national R&D policy, which was proposed and adopted by Cabinet a bit earlier. One of those missions is science and technology for the alleviation of poverty. It is therefore perhaps one of the most difficult of the missions, because the others are rather obvious: communication technology, biotechnology, manufacturing. But how you can mobilize and harness modern science and technology to alleviate poverty in a meaningful way is much more difficult to do, and a lot of sort of head scratching has to be done to make it work. So therefore, the Academy decided to adopt this, to establish a standing committee of outstanding people from different disciplines throughout the country, and to look at the issues, to look at what is being done, to identify topics where the Academy may be able to make a difference. The initial membership is shown there. You'll see Dr. Mambila Ramphele is a member, and Professor Dan Mayana, editor of the Medical Journal, and the chairperson was Professor Sagadevan Mundri from the field of agriculture. So this committee, it decided that there was one particular topic that could be an avenue for real improvement, and that was the question as to whether there were science-based improvements in rural and subsistence agriculture that could be adopted practically in South African rural areas, and that would allow farmers to have access to modern technology, modern scientific knowledge, to improve the productivity and to move into the markets, etc. So this particular report, which copies of which were sent, as I believe, to each of the members of this committee, but if you haven't received them, I'd be happy to send copies. This one had a number of sections. I want to emphasize that it's multidisciplinary, so we had a social scientist reviewing the actual on-the-ground statistics of what is going on in South Africa. How many subsistence farmers are there? How many people are there who grow crops to live or to make a living, and partly or wholly? So that exemplifies the first topic. The next slide shows that this committee has now been augmented in order to bring in more expertise, and therefore what is listed there are the topics which we will be looking at in this coming year that were identified in this last year, you'll see that they've agreed now, after much discussion, that we have to understand the nature of poverty and the drivers of it, and look at the interplay of economic, climatic, technical, scientific, and other factors. There's to be a forum on how to meet basic needs and how science can contribute to that. Issues of women and children's health, how to ensure that there are graduate teachers across in all schools to improve the teaching of especially of science and technology, but also of other subjects. Local economic development in small towns, poverty and critical skills, the relationship there, housing delivery impact on the environment, soil health, and communicating with policymakers. So those are out of a large selection of topics have been identified as forums that will be held. There's one, in fact, coming up in the next month, but the others will follow in short order, and each will give rise to such a report. Members of the committee, such a report is not just a report you put on the shelf. Each one, to be accepted by the council, has to come with a complete dissemination plan and implementation plan. Who will be asked to look at the recommendations? Who will be asked to implement them? What help can we give such implementers in follow-up? It's not a once-off thing, doing the report and handing it over. Next slide. I just want to indicate here very briefly that this has now a membership of 22, drawn from all disciplines, all sections of the community and across the country. Next slide is the rest of the list. Next slide. Chairperson, contrasting with this setting up of a standing committee and having a series of public forums with a report giving consensus recommendations, is the second methodology that we use, which is to set up a consensus panel of experts to spend time looking at all the evidence that they can find, to test that evidence, to look at its reliability, to look at its consistency, and to report in detail with recommendations in all areas for all stakeholders. And the example which you see here was one that the Academy itself initiated on nutritional influences on human immunity in HIV infection and clinical TB. And you'll see the membership is listed there. You probably can't read it, but it is experts from virology, from infectious diseases, from clinical trials, from public health, across the range, one from Tanzania and two from the United States. And the report is shown on the next slide. This report, which I have here, was issued, released in August this year. It was first sent to the Department of Health, the Department of Science and Technology, for their scrutiny, and then released publicly and to the media and to all stakeholders. Chairperson, I want to illustrate, this is a 300-page report that makes a set of recommendations for public policy, public practice, and also for new research. Because members of the committee will be appalled to hear that when we examined all the evidence of this highly contested area, we actually, for example, found only 14 studies worldwide, of which half were not done in developing countries, on these interventions, nutritional interventions in HIV infection. That is appalling, considering that every drug that you take for high blood pressure has probably had 75 drug trials throughout the world. It is absolutely astonishing. So therefore, our recommendations obviously are that the various policymakers in the country, whether it's DST or Department of Education, NRF, have to build up national capacity in nutritional research, infectious disease research, but especially in clinical trials, epidemiological studies, that will actually give us the evidence on which to base recommendations in this very tough field. However, there are also some very alarming findings. For example, that probably as many as half of the people living in this country do not have an intake that is adequate of many micronutrients. That's what is called hidden hunger. People that appear to be normal, but actually do not have a sufficient intake of what are called vitamins and minerals. So therefore, there is a tremendous amount that needs to be done. I'd also like to indicate to the committee that this work is not just analytical work. Because you bring together people who have, in a sense, very specialized knowledge, and you force them to agree on a consensus of what they are. In other words, there are recommendations here. You can't be one person says you should do that. The whole panel has to agree that this is supported by evidence and is, it must, should be done and should be recommended. And to give an example that we drew together as part of this work, experts working in gastroenterology, the medical discipline of what goes on in your intestines, experts in nutrition, especially nutrition that affects the bacteria that live in your bowel, as well as immunologists who work on HIV. And to our astonishment, we have found that there is a much neglected aspect of HIV research and practice in the country, namely the very frequent occurrence of diarrhea and malabsorption, which is very important and which has not enjoyed attention before from these people in the different disciplines concerned. So we bring together people and they're able to make a new start. And some of the recommendations here we've checked, this is reported being read in by the National Academy of Science in the USA, and they say that this report has uncovered things that they have never heard of. So therefore we in South Africa, by putting together people, top people from different disciplines, making them talk to each other and argue with each other, it's a creative process that really takes us forward. It's not just a bunch of people saying, we agree this should be done. It actually brings out new things. So, Chairperson, this report is now out, and we are following up with the various departments how it can be implemented. And the Academy, as a developer, we heard earlier about a developmental state. Unlike the National Academies of other countries, we have a specific obligation to follow up on our reports with all the stakeholders and the policymakers to ensure that these are not neglected and don't get put on the shelf. So therefore, in each case, we have a follow-up committee that must ensure that things happen and that there's a real impact on the lives of people. So there are further consensus studies now in preparation. One of them, which Dr. Sekulpelo is interested in, which he very much supports, is on postgraduate studies in South Africa. You have heard from the NRF about the PhD as a driver. Now, that's easier said than done. A PhD is a PhD is a PhD, but it can be very different, coming from different institutions, different disciplines, different ways of doing it. And we think that we need to look very carefully at national policy, the qualification standard of the PhD, the actual practice in institutions, and we will most likely be setting up with the Department of Science and Technology, the NRF, the CHE, and the Higher Education Quality Committee, a consensus study, again, of 12 to 15 experts who will look at South African practice, at the statistics, at the evidence, at what is happening internationally, and will make recommendations to the Department of Education, to these other stakeholders, about how we can ensure that when we have PhD as the driver of national capacity development, that there is a real advance, and not a paper advance, not just numbers, but real people that can lead and make a difference. So there will be a number of other consensus studies. Obviously, we are marketing ourselves to departments of transport, of communications, of agriculture, asking them, where are the problems you've got that we can look at? Chairperson, the next slide now moves to the financial report very briefly, because you have this in your report. This is an audited, the audited financial statements. What they say is that the council has approved the audited financial statements. You can see that there, the chairperson and the CEO. The next slide shows that the auditors have independently verified and they have given us an unqualified opinion that our financial statements in all material respects reflect the position. Next slide. The balance sheet, you can see that there is a fall in the total assets, but that is because we had grants that were delayed in their utilization and that we have now caught up with them. Next slide. You can see that our income and our expenditure is virtually matched, so we have a surplus of 4,000 rands on just under 6 million rands expenditure. Next slide. The individual expenditures are listed here, I won't go into them, but you can see that our salary and human resources expenditure is less than 40% of our total expenditure, therefore operations use up 60% of our resources. Next slide. And then the grants we have received, you can see, as I mentioned, that the academies are independent, but they work with government and receive funds from government for specific activities, for specific tasks, which we then carry out. And you can see that our grants from the departments, parliamentary grants to the Department of Science and Technology from Parliament, has improved in the last year. That we have the grant, which was mentioned by Dr. Marty, from the U.S. National Academies, 1.6 million. And that's given over 5 years, this amount, that's the amount for this 1 year. The Sydney Brenner Fellowship is mentioned there. The money was received in the previous year, and we have grants from the International Academy, called TWAS, the Third World Academy of Sciences. You may have wondered about that acronym. From the Academy in Brazil for that water study, and also from the African Academy of Sciences for infrastructure. I think the next slide, just essentially in closing then, Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, the Academy has reached a very critical stage in its career, in its lifetime. We are now generally acknowledged as the South Africa's National Science Academy, and internationally receive more and more recognition and offers of collaboration. However, we see our role mainly, and this I must emphasize, to assist this country in its development by being able to mobilize in a very professional way, in a way that allows you to say that these recommendations are grounded in evidence that can be demonstrated. It's public, it's available for everyone to see, and that those then are recommendations that can help us as a country develop. And that is the main role of this academy, which is based on its traditional role of being a collection of top people from many disciplines who are committed for, well, our motto is science for society. Thank you very much.
Professor Gillis, thank you very much. You're allowed to clap your hands. You may have to proceed. Yeah, thanks. Can I join you? Thanks, and Dr. Marty, thanks. I'm going to give two members to engage with these reports. The report that was published in August, is it available? Did you bring us some copies?
Chairperson, the position is that we released it in August, and we have a standing list of people to whom these are sent. They include the 30 or 35 members of this committee. So our understanding is that we dispatched the copies of this to all of you. If that is not the case, and from the heads nodding in the wrong direction, I'm very, very ashamed and apologetic about that. But it was sent to the parliamentary office, and that's Mr. Vela can explain. I don't know.
No, we don't have to explain. We can just ensure that we get them here.
We will get them to
you. But the copies that you have here,
we will remain here
in the meanwhile.
Absolutely.
We'll release them after we've received our copies and send them back to you.
Thank you.
Yes, we have seen none of these other documents that we've got on this list. So please just follow that up as well.
Just put us on your mailing list consistently and ensure that you dispatch a box of that number that you've said. I want us to engage both reports, members. I'll come back to you. Before you speak, welcome. Yes. You addressed everything, and thanks for the unqualified report. It's quite refreshing. What you did not address, and I want you to address the issue that is raised in your audit report about the matter of emphasis. I actually prefer presenters to be upfront about those matters so that we don't raise them as, some sort of a curveball. You may brag as much as you can, but you must also tell us that there are problems. Let's understand the problem as well. You don't have to respond now immediately, but just have it in mind that before we conclude the discussions, we must come back to this matter so that we get absolute clarity. I'm taking hands now. Keep raising them. And then Comrade Farida will follow.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My voice is not a very good one today. I hope people will hear what I'm saying. I'll start with the first one, Chumisano, which is, in my view, a very important program. Now, what I want to know is whether there is any measure of our country's capacity in relation to the technology that is being developed what is our country's capacity, and vis-a-vis the intake that is being developed, so that we can see whether we are meeting the objectives of capacitating our country to the level which is going to be useful for ourselves. The second one, point which I wanted to raise, relates again to that very report as to, I see a number of people being trained in terms of the report. Number of people are being trained, and that they are being absorbed in industry. To what extent is that absorption helping poor communities? Because it's one thing to train people, they get their jobs, but they get their jobs away from where we want to resolve the real problem. And if they continue to get their jobs away from the place where we want to resolve the problem, well, what is of use if we are putting money this side and money goes the other side, where it is of no use to the very people we want to? So I want to see the linkage between that training and the actual usefulness to the alleviation of poverty and things at the level of rural communities. That's those two. But the other report, you said we can take them later. One is the one on the academy. My own view is that academics by themselves have no meaning until we define their meaning to what we want to achieve. We can be academic and we're very happy being recognized, and we can rank in the world number one or two, but until like that ranking and the usefulness of our academy, it can be seen vis-a-vis what I've been saying, then it doesn't become an academy of any usefulness. I just want to understand the extent to which this one in particular will be useful to resolve the country's problem that we are in. I see also here that the augmented committee hasn't increased tremendously the representation of rural universities. I may be wrong, but I've just gone through it quickly, and I'm not seeing much of the rural universities which are actually grappling with the problem that I'm trying to bring to the fore. And why is it that University of Venda, the Walter Sisulu University in the Transkei, well, the universities that on a daily basis are actually grappling with this idea. I see Northwest has come in, and I'm very pleased about that as far as my logic is concerned. Then the last one, has to deal with things are now mixed up here.
Don't worry.
This when I put my hand somewhere where I was poised. That the ranking. I see here we are ranked 18th, I think. Who actually ranks? What criteria are they using for ranking? Are they using their own established criteria that they have developed, which may not have relevance to our own situations? And then we feel happy, that's why we are 18. But that 18 in real terms, it is not having any meaning when you want to translate it to your own condition. It may be hundreds by that time. So I just want to see to what extent that ranking has relevance to our own situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me take the second one. I'll take two questions so that I see a lot of hands. Ms. Mohammed.
Okay, I just want to address to Ms. Arno first.
I think you had indicated about technology stations in clothing and textile. Perhaps you could tell us a bit more with regard to that. I think you know that we have challenges in that area. Perhaps you could just elaborate what can be done further. I think both the presentations did acknowledge that you have a problem with regard to women's involvement. That's a question for both of you. How do you envisage to do more advocacy in that area so that you can attract the potential clients that you're looking for? In terms of even in the rural communities, as my colleague has just mentioned, what would you do if that's the challenge you would actually recognize? I have also something that I want to say. In terms of committee memberships, how do you want us to be involved? Because we would like to be involved. In terms of the conferencing and all the activities that are going on, it might be a good idea for us to be part and parcel of that activity. Back to Kumisano, I think I need to say that on your graphs, you don't have numbers, ma'am, or sir. You don't have numbers. So I think it's the first one on technology and how many people you've assisted. I see there's a stark decline in terms of your assistance from 2005-2006-2007, particularly in the clothing and textile industry. I think I want us to recognize that that area is a problematic area. And perhaps if you could tell us why there's that decline from 127 million, is it million or thousand? I don't see any indication of what amount it is. So, no, is it number of cases? Okay, number of cases. So 127 number, 272 only, and then 80 in the chemicals to 60. There is quite a bit of decline. So perhaps if you could just tell us why is that decline? I saw throughout both the presentations, there was nothing on climate change. Climate change is one of the most important, especially for us, I think. Climate change might be something we must look at. What does bother me quite a bit is youth. How do we involve youth? Because we do know that in terms of our capital, you know, the innovation hub, and all the expertise there, we have the older generation. So how do we involve more youth in these projects and in terms of academia as well? What does also, what I also thought about now is, in terms of studies security, if you're looking at some thematic approaches towards what you're going to look at in terms of studies. I think most of my colleagues would be very interested in the second chart that you have the zeros in red. That is a concern, as you've indicated as well. So perhaps you could just comment on that. That would help us. The last question on Sumisano is operational and administrative expenditure. You said 9%. Perhaps you could just tell us the detail, a little bit in terms of your 9% expenditure. I only have this chart for you, sir, that I'd like to just refer you to. Perhaps if you could also tell us, I somehow want to understand the breakdown. You said male, female, and then white and black. Somehow I was trying to make sense of that. If you could just tell me how you've broken down that too. It's not the same. Anyway, I also recognize that you haven't been doing very well with women. So how are you going to do some advocacy and recruitment? I think in terms of your grants, you did admit that they were delayed. Why were they delayed? And I think there's a lot of need. As far as I know, I speak to a lot of students and they say we can't get money and we can't get the grants, so what do we do? My last question is, I think we need to look at job creation. Whilst we know that job creation is a holistic approach and poverty alleviation and those issues are linked, but we need to look at job creation. Because we always complain to our economists there's jobless growth in the economy. So perhaps if we could get some of that information. Thank you.
Thank you. We can start with Teresa.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. The Honourable Member raised the issue of our country's capacity in terms of the technologies which are being developed. Chimichanga's competitive advantage in this country is the technology that we develop or upgrade is demand-driven. The SMEs want that kind of technology. And that helps because then we know that we don't invest in white elephants. The type of equipment that we purchase specifically for SMEs, specifically for regional economic growth. And also, we look at any new applied research and development project is to develop near market technologies. For example, new ways to weld automotive components which are in line with European Union standards. That is a near market technology that you can develop, which has direct implications for our automotive component suppliers. So that's where we win as an agency, that we are focusing more on a demand-driven approach, that we are not going to engage in projects which has no value for the SMEs, because they don't have the time for long-term initiatives. So it's about the kind of things that they have to address yesterday for them to be competitive in the market.
The second question, Honourable, the Honourable Member raised the number of people that we are training and absorbing, and I think it's quite a germane question, especially with the challenges that we face in the country. We found that, unfortunately, unless we start developing the infrastructure in the poor underserved areas, we might change. We have a lot of people who have been trained in historically disadvantaged areas, like at the University of Limpopo. But because the environment, the opportunities in that region are not there, they tend to move on. So I'm of the belief, as a collective with other institutions of government, as we develop centers of excellence across the country, including under several provinces, we could set up science parks where SMEs in Polokwane, for example, can know that they cannot just get technology help, but then they can also access highly trained staff, be it students, be it interns and stuff. But those are the challenges which we cannot relegate to the past. If we don't develop the underserved provinces, and as I mentioned, our strategic thrust within Chimichanga is we have to be judged by this committee and by government that we have a presence in every single province of the country. That can never be an excuse going forward. But we are developing infrastructure. As I speak now, two of my project managers are making presentation and talking to the Mpumalanga legislature, specifically because we want to set up a technology in agri-food processing, and it's relevant to my project.
The Honourable Member raised the issue in terms of clothing and textiles. The Honourable Member hit the nail right on the head. The challenges that the industry faces actually trickle down to our activities. As we have huge challenges coming from low-cost countries, specifically China and others, we find that some of the SMEs and larger companies that we've been assisting in the past are closing down. And we have the opinion that we'll never be able to compete in terms of volume, but our technology station now is orientating. It's one of our flagship programs with the whole Chimichanga Fund. It's reorientating the attention to find innovative ways for our SMEs to be competitive. If there's an order for 100,000 T-shirts, if you cannot make them here, people are going to go to China. But where we can win is if Chimichanga has a golf day and wants to manufacture 200 high-quality golf shirts. That's the kind of niche area. And the challenge is not unique to South Africa. I think also some of the developed countries are faced with an avalanche of either cheap imports or stolen goods from those countries. And it's actually affecting our industry. Unfortunately, also, I think our large clothing distributors and companies are not playing ball in terms of assisting local MSMEs. So on one side, we have Chimichanga and other agencies of government, the Productivity Institute and CEDA, assisting them to find niche markets.
but there's no uptake. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, most of the SMEs are closing down. What we can do going forward, and you mentioned the whole thing, is what is the other solutions? We know that there are the two key regions for clothing and textile in South Africa. It's KwaZulu-Natal and in the Western Cape. We have a solid presence in the Western Cape. In KwaZulu-Natal, some of the expertise from here are usually transferred to KwaZulu-Natal. But going forward, as Chumishana expands its footprint over and above what we want to do going forward, is to set up a center. There's already a world-class center in clothing and textiles at the Durham University of Technology, but we don't have a physical presence. I think that will help, and then we'll define it to our funders that this is where we want to look at technology innovation to help these SMEs to produce highly competitive products. But it is a challenge. It is something which is very close to my heart because we've seen a downturn in the number of SMEs that we're helping. And the issue of how do you attract women in our activities and technology. What we do is we are doing some practical things. For example, I'm one of the adjudicators on the Department of Trade and Industries Technology for Women in Business, where they look at what the women are doing around the country and identify those who are at the cutting edge of technology. And what we do is by sitting there, Chumishano basically has a treasure chest of women businesses we can help. And we are not just looking at those women-owned businesses which wins awards. We are looking at those who are probably either periphery, and we provide solutions. And we find that there's a lot of in rural areas who are doing a lot of great work, employing hundreds and hundreds of local people, but they don't even know about Tunisia. And we find that we can use Technology for Women Business Program as a conduit to announce our thing. But also, just to kill two birds with one stone, with what we would like, with all due respect, the committee members to do, especially in to also highlight Chimishana's program and tell people that, you know, look, there are people who can help. And you don't have to call at the receptionist, you can call the CEO of Chimishana. If he doesn't help you, we'll see what you can do when it comes to present the next annual report. Those are the kind of things so that people have an understanding that we exist. We're using taxpayers' money for their greater benefit. But the issue at hand is we can do more in terms of advocacy. And I think that's also where the honorable members can also help in their regions about the kind of problems government has to help them. The involvement of youth is quite important. And like I said, and my colleagues from DFC, I've said it over and over again, if there's one important thing DFC has done, is the internship program. Because I think the mandate from them was, we don't want to give you money, ring fence, millions of rand, and then you find that the interns sit at your technology stations and SMBs and read newspapers day in and day out. They have to be seen to making contribution. And our assessment, which we did a report recently to DST, shows that, and it was done by DST independent of us, that they are at work. They're getting world-class training. Some of them, like I said, are absorbed into industry. Are we doing enough? We can do much better. But then there's a link between our constraints as an institution and what we can do. But then we are of the opinion that as Chumishana grows beyond our stay at Chumishana, that GST could expand the number of technology stations, and ego, that will increase the number of opportunities for youth and interns, for example, to get involved with our activities. And the issue of the 9% expenditure, I can just leave the discussion, but we are of the opinion that we've looked globally, 15-20% is regarded as adequate, but it needs work. At 9%, we have the opinion that you can benchmark us against any agency on the planet. We are doing well. The 9% focus on salaries, on expenditure with our offices, and other things. But in terms of expenditure and other things, we've kept it below, and we are in a process of continuous improvement, reducing telephone costs, travel, those kind of things. We have the opinion that the money is better spent with our technology station. That's where the 9% comes from. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm not sure whether you wanted to comment on the climate change question that was raised, but I'm going to leave it to us as well, because it was raised to both of you as one priority issue.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much for those questions. If you, with respect to your own point about the matter of emphasis, which is on page 79, it reflects something about a National Science Academy in that it has to live by its wits, which is why it's an academy, in the sense that the infrastructure that we have depends on being given work to do. If I can just make you familiar with the fact that in Africa there are now 14 science academies. Before the Asadi program, we made a careful look at Kenya, Uganda, Ghana, etc. The picture in Nigeria, for example, 5 years ago, is that the average age of the academicians was about 75. They were 95% male. They were mostly mathematics and physics and chemistry, because even the biological sciences, let alone the social sciences, were not regarded as real science. And therefore, they were totally honorific in nature. And it would need a very small budget to hold an annual election to have people come along in black suits and receive their awards. So we are not that kind of academy. We build on that. So therefore, the point made by the auditors is that we depend on ongoing donor support. That is what I mentioned, is that if the Department of Health wants us to do a study, or the Department of Transport, or the Department of Environment and Tourism, they will have to fund it. And we will also have to establish a norm, which is the norm in the United States and Britain, that we can have overheads built into a budget. We don't have fees for the volunteer academics who take part, but the American Academy charges 15% of every grant as the overhead to keep the institution going, its infrastructure. We will have to negotiate ultimately with our commissioners, because we would like to be in South Africa, the developmental state, also receiving 80% of our work will be commissioned by government departments that have problems that would like us to look at. They will then pay for that. We will establish a model whereby we have overhead charges which allow us to keep the infrastructure going and to be able to do that work. So that matter of emphasis is well taken, but it in fact is the nature of a modern science academy, is that it has to live by its wits. There's no guaranteed income, and without grants and commissioned work, we'd sink back to being purely a club that meets once a year to congratulate each other, and that's not what we're about. If I can deal with the questions from the honourable member opposite me, I hope that I have tried to answer the point about, is this an academy, just an academy, or is it doing something for the country? We would hope to persuade you, sir, that in the course of the years to come, we will make a material contribution, an increasing contribution, not only to policy making at the level of government, but also to the ability of people to cope with their circumstances. Because this is not only coming through policy top-down, we also have ways of trying to make benefits felt directly at the level of the user. So I hope that our track record will convince you in time. The second is that your point is very well taken, that the rural representation, for example, of the augmented Committee on Science for the Alleviation of Poverty, it is inadequate, but remember that we have a combination of volunteer membership and asking people to be willing to do this. In other words, every time we decide on forming a committee, we invite every member to volunteer on the strength of that person's interest to become a member, and we also put it on our website and ask anybody who's not a member to volunteer. I think your point is well taken. That committee should have people from universities that work in a rural setting, like, for example, the University of Venda, Science and Technology, and so we will address that, and we will try to improve on the representativity of the people in the particular projects. The ranking of a journal such as our Journal of Science is done on the internationally much contested, but otherwise the only game in town, of looking at the citations. In other words, what is the use that other people make of your paper? If your paper is published under your name and nobody ever refers to it in any other article, it is thought to be a proxy for the fact that paper wasn't very good, nor did it have much impact. If, for example, a paper has 100 citations or 1,000 citations, then it suggests that a lot of people are reading it and a lot of people are pointing to other people to read that, because they're saying this is the point made by that article. So therefore, while again, in our project that Dr. Marty referred to of South African research and scholarly journals, we want to establish, in addition to this contested international system of citation indexing, we want to establish an African index of all journals so that we'll have African citation rates and African impact analysis, which will answer your question much more directly. So that's built into our plans. If I can come to the Honourable Member, or just to the right of me, we are making every attempt, as I said, to involve women. If you look at the augmented science for poverty alleviation, it's 11 out of 22. That's 50% women in that. They volunteer, they are keen, they want to make a contribution. And we will do that wherever we can. Obviously, it is a question of the pool size, which is a big reflection of the kinds of problems which we'll be addressing in postgraduate study and financial and other circumstantial problems that women have in advancing their careers. But we are very, very committed to increasing the role of women in advocacy, increasing the participation in these processes. If we take, the point is very well made, and again, Dr. Marty and I will take this up, that we should let you know, each member of the committee know of our forums, of our meetings, so if you have a specific invitation, know about it in advance. We find that the website, which is a very efficient way, everything that we do is advertised on the website, but I would like to ask members of this committee to consult our website frequently, because it's much more efficient and immediate than relying on other ways of communicating. But we will send you email notices of all our meetings and all our activities. And we are very responsive. If this committee, for example, believes that certain issues that you have covered in all your many sessions with these the different organizations in science and technology, if you think that certain areas are neglected, you can either ask the department concerned to approach us and to look at that matter, or you can bring it to our attention and we would then go to the relevant department and make sure that if we do that, that it's done cooperatively. So again, we will make sure that you do receive notices, but do please look at our website, which is given on our annual report, the address. Climate change was one of the topics that we are very keen to look at. There was a symposium in the DST which was organized. It was a very impressive and a nice sort of scoping symposium which has outlined the kinds of areas that we might need for more detailed work. So we will work closely with this department, the Department of Science, Technology and Environment and Tourism, in order to be able to find the areas where we can make a contribution. Youth involvement. I just want to mention that we have for a long time, ever since Dr. Ben Ngubane was the Minister of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology, he was very emphatic that to have a lot of grey beards, or white heads as he called them, as the National Academy was not adequate. In his view, he wanted to have grassroots involvement, young people involvement. Now, the average age of our members is only two-thirds that of the present Nigerian Academy. We've made a lot of progress. We have lots of younger members. These people that are winning our Young Scientist Award, we nominate them if we can to get them into membership. But more importantly, a new organization has been created under the auspices of ITSU Africa, Regional Office of Africa, which is called the World Academy of Young Scientists, WAYS. Is the new acronym you'll have to get used to if it gets going. And there is a WAYS Africa organization, and we are in discussion with the president of WAYS Africa, who happens to be working in South Africa at CSIR, that we should form a national chapter for South Africa of WAYS Africa, for which scholars and scientists under the age of 40 would qualify. And we would then bring them into our councils, into our committees, consult with them and hear the voice, if you like, of the young scientists and young scholars, which I think will make a material difference to our ability to be responsive to these young voices. We have looked at security issues. In fact, one of the projects that I didn't mention, which is under examination, is biosecurity. That's not quite what people mean by crime and punishment, if you like, but biosecurity is a very technical topic. It is partly the question of these bird flu and SARS and other sudden pandemics, where we will probably, early in the next year, establish a standing committee to which the government can turn if there is a sudden crisis involving a biohazard of that kind. But I personally have in the past worked with Mr. George Soros when he, with his Open Society Foundation, was very worried about crime, not only in South Africa, but in all developing countries, and developed countries for that matter. And he wanted scholars to find ways of addressing that in a scholarly, scientific way. It was appalling, the response from all our law faculties, all our criminology institutes and so on. There was literally no response. It's a very poor area in terms of thinking of scholarly and evidence-based ways of dealing with things. Most people say, you know, catch a criminal and put their criminal in prison and keep them there for a long time. That appears to be the science in security, but it's not science, and we need to do much better. The charts, if I can just explain, roughly speaking, I'm sorry that we haven't divided it to white women, women and black women and so on, but you can take it that an average of a third of our black members are women, and an average of one third of our female members are black. Just as a general, in future, if you'd like it, we can list them independently. We will do that. And then the last top point about job creation, the study that we will do about postgraduate study will have a real component, I hope, that links the production of graduates, postgraduates, people who have PhD degrees, with the ability of those people to create jobs and to be able to be active in the job market and not to immigrate or to contribute to this country. So I think that we will build into this the link between the economy, between the job market, between job creation and the study, so that we can make a contribution to that as well. Thank you very much for the questions.
Thank you very much. I've got the following names. I'm going to take Mr. Mokel, Mr. Tebe, and then Mr. Ainsley, Mr. Planchet. Okay, and the last two names, Professor Muhammad and Mr. Noble. I'm worried, though, that we're asking very long questions and getting very long answers. And we're not going to finish all this. I've got no illusion or thing. I'm not thinking that we'll exhaust all the questions today. But I rely on yourselves, members, and the responses to be short and precise. Can I take the next two?
You'll be happy. I'll ask two short questions, but you may be unhappy that they deserve long answers, but that you can live by that. Chairman, the 10-year innovation plan hasn't been mentioned by either presenters, and I want to know, I'm sure it's a rhetorical question, how they're plugged into that process of developing the 10-year innovation plan and its rollout. I'm sure it can enjoy a short answer. The second question is to Ms. Anacross in particular. We're looking at job creation initiatives that are labor intensive, but we also need the technology to become more efficient, productive, and competitive locally and internationally. How are you looking at striking that balance by supporting those SMEs that in particular can become the job creators that large corporates can't become any longer?
You've got a very serious challenge.
Yeah, I've not seen the least intimidated by that. But anyway, thanks, Chair, for the letter. I just want to put the following question to Ms. Anna, first of all. We do recognize the fact that the technology stations that are found all over the place do indeed make quite a small but important contribution in the growth of our economy. And if one may look at, for instance, the manufacturing sector, you will know that the medium-term budget policy statement makes a very strong point about the need for exports and manufacturing. And just how do you see your role in assisting that whole drive towards exports and manufacturing, given the mandate of Chumisano from now going forward? And to Asaf, you have invited us, Professor Hippers, to indeed visit your website a while ago. I was looking at the website, and particularly this very report. May I just say that we've got 10 pages with members of the Academy of Science from 64 to 74. I just wish to know perhaps
whether you don't think there is another innovative way, given the financial constraints of ASAF. Council members, it's important here that we know them, but just so that the document doesn't become unnecessary, bulky, and unwieldy almost. But if you say on page 58, I think it is, that you want to be, I mean, you are independent, that one of the successful implementation elements or signs of the successful implementation of the strategic plan, you say here, where ASAF's independence of government influence is prized, I thought you would refer to your independent state of mind as opposed to being independent of government, because in one of your interventions you made the point that you are looking forward to a situation where government departments will be your main source of revenue as a result of the work that you are doing. And I thought that you look at this in a very dynamic and interdependent manner. And lastly, unfortunately, your very report, the annual report, one is unable to read it. And you are making the point on page 56 that there needs to be a professional redesigning of the website. I mean, any steps that you've taken to ensure that that happens? We've got GCIF. I know it helps government departments a lot. You know, science and technology and other departments are a case in point where their websites have been very greatly enhanced and so forth. So, Chairperson, on that, perhaps if Professor Hayford and Chumisano could respond to my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's kick off with the answers.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll be as brief as I can. The 10-year innovation plan from GST, it informs our decisions going forward, but we, Commissioner Trust, as from the 1st of April, will be part and parcel of the proposed technology and innovation agencies within GST. So our reorientation and focus of Commissioner will be informed by where GST is taking the innovation mandate in this country. So we'll be part and parcel of the whole setup. The innovation, the TI is meant to address the innovation challenge in this country. And I think that is reflected heavily in the 10-year plan. So Chumichano will be positioned in that new institution, which is going to be a listed public entity. The second question is, how do you strike a balance between job creation in terms of a labor-intensive drive and the technology intensity? I subscribe to the notion that it's obviously industry-specific. In the Western Cape, in Limpopo and other areas, in the agricultural sector, you can still have technologies which necessarily negate employment creation, actually enhance it. And we believe that our technology should be so positioned that it doesn't negate the social imperatives that government has in terms of job creation. And in the high-end area where we, especially the high-end technology area where we are operating in, also plastics and automotive components, it's usually small SMEs anyway, 20 to 100 people. So the balance is to be, are we having enough innovative ideas for technology upgrades in labor-intensive areas like agriculture and other things? Because that's a long-term industry, and we have the opinion that if we can create an environment where an SME in the Western Cape can produce and beneficiate more products, it will create more jobs, while he also going to strike a balance between the technology he needs in terms of quality assurance and this kind of thing. And I think that's the kind of environment Chumichano is operating in. But it's a very delicate balance, as the Honourable Member has highlighted. The issue of the manufacturing sector, the Honourable Member is quite correct, and I was conscious of the fact that the Honourable Minister of Finance has raised the issue that we have to start exporting. Our balance of payments leaves a lot to be desired and is a threat to our economy. We've orientated our technology, and we've actually spawned them into clusters. We have a manufacturing cluster where things like rapid prototyping, tooling, and automotives are driven towards high-quality products, specifically for exports. Without a tooling industry, and the National Tooling Initiative is actually driven by the GTI, but Chumichano and the GST has positioned the tooling initiative to focus on innovation and so that
we actually reverse the importing of high quality tools. We actually manufacture them here and hopefully export not just the high quality tooling but also the manufactured product. So that's where we are positioning Chunishano. Obviously there's a lot of scope, but it's something that we have to focus on. And the issue of exports is not just on tooling and other things. On the U.S. Eastern Seaboard, the most popular fruit juice is Ceres fruit juice. Comes from South Africa, but it needs high quality quality assurance and those kind of things. And that's where we can look at how we can enhance SABS capacity to improve the quality of the products that we export worldwide. And I think also the issue of manufacturing, where we feel that we are doing an impact is the design component of our Institute for Advanced Tooling. If you don't have probably design tools or products, you're not going to sell them on the global market, hence you're not going to export. Where most developing countries, specifically India and China and Korea, have done well is enhance their design capacity. With our Institute for Design, Institute for Advanced Tooling, the one specifically at the Walter Sisulu University in East London, that's their primary focus. They don't have a lot of infrastructure, but they're developing South African capacity for designing high quality tools, and we think that that could be a major input. Obviously, we have to expand the activity.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take Asaf, but later on, after you've answered the questions, if we still have time, you must tell us how you relate to the CSIR, for instance, and the trading industry. Do you have any relationship with the department in terms of your way going forward? Don't answer now. Let's just take the others. I'm going to take, let me just check my list again. I think it's Mr. Blanche and Mr. Hez. You want to come first?
Well, I thought
we have
responded.
Oh, Asaf,
if I could just very quick, I'll be very quick.
Oh, yes,
the first point is that we are very well plugged into the 10-year plan, as Dr. Sekapila will support, is that our big project on increasing the publishing, the quality and the volume of publishing solely papers from South Africa, which is one of the core indicators of the 10-year plan, as well as the production of PhDs and competent, leadership-capable postgraduates. Those are very much sort of in direct consultation with the department. The second point is very well taken. The independence that we prize is the same independence as the judiciary. In other words, it's part of the country's structure and fabric, but it's got to be left to do its work on its own. But once that work has been delivered, then we become partners in a very intense way. Too intense from some department's point of view, but then we want to have it turned into action. So it's that sort of independence. It's independence for the country so that we can do the job properly. The other point is the question of the annual report. I'm afraid that we are a young organization. South Africa has had a troubled history. For example, in no other country are there ratings of scholars so that people are known to be A-rated and B-rated, etc. And that's the big story, that all institutions say we've got so many A-rated people. That is the aspirational standard that we had to come into as a new academy. So therefore, we are temporarily highlighting the membership so that people know that we are not Mickey Mouse. These are people that they know about, that they've heard about, that are very respectable. I've had experiences where I've talked to DDGs and they said, what is that? Who are the members? I've never heard of them, I don't know who they are. And so we said, well, let's put it down here and they can look at it, not just a list of names, but actually what they are. But we won't be done every year. The last point is the website. And Dr. Marty maybe can just very quickly report on that. We are conscious of the way that the website, the multi-user nature, who uses it. We have certain business we do through our website, volunteering for committees and so on, notices of our meetings. We will try to make it. Dr. Marty, do you want to add to that?
Thanks to you, Honorable Chair. The website and the redesign, the focus really is because since the Academy has actually been shifting now the work from a honorific organization to a hands-on organization that really has a focus on policy advice, through the reports and the consensus studies and the committee forums that the Academy has. So therefore, the website, has been redesigned so that it's in a way, it sort of reports on the day-to-day activities of the academy, to an extent that now we've advertised a position for someone who will be constantly updating, effectively from January next year, will be constantly updating, you know, the website to really market, you know, and profile the work that the academy is doing, so that the website is engaging, you know. Hence, we make constant reference, you know, to the website, so we want it to be constantly engaging. That's the focus. Thanks.
You not told he says I'm not taking.
I was asking because I had answers.
Oh, he was saying I was taking you first.
Chairperson, we're a science and technology committee, and yet we have not yet learned how to use the air conditioner. I mean, it's a very simple procedure. Maybe we should apply our minds to it. But very often, out of this heat, we feel quite wilted, at least I do. Chair, I'd like to ask Tumisana. Last time they met us, about a year ago, we indicated our concern that they were not reaching sufficient SMEs. I'm very pleased to note now, when we see the report, that that number of small businesses reached has increased fairly dramatically. But of course, it's not so important the number of small businesses that you reach. It's the impact that your advice and your assistance has on SMEs. Now, I want to know what measures you have in place to assess the impact of your involvement with these small businesses. And I note that you hint at some of these measures on page 56 of the hard copy of your report. You mentioned there, for example, the number of contracts with, I assume, local industries. And you indicate that 5% of small businesses have these contracts. Now, do you have a target figure related to the number of contracts which these businesses should enter into? I note you mentioned a figure of 5% of the SMEs have these contracts. That seems to me very low. You've already referred another measure you indicate is export markets. You've made some reference to that. And in your report, you indicate that 10% of small businesses now have export contracts. Is that a good figure, a bad figure, a low figure? What is it? Do you have a target related to exports? Another measure you indicate is new employment. And there, according to your report, 80% of small businesses have increased. One assumes after the advice from you and assistance from you, 80% have increased the number of new employees in their businesses. That seems a pretty high figure. But do you have a target in relation to new employment being created as a result of the work that you are doing with small businesses? And do you have any other measurements that you use that would indicate this impact? And then the second and last question to Ms. Simon is you indicated that there's a mismatch between what small businesses require and what you're able to offer. Other than resources, what are the problems? What are you doing to bridge this mismatch between what is required and what you can offer? Thank you. And then to the Academy. Are you not in danger of duplicating research that is already being done? Or maybe duplication of research is not such a bad thing. Maybe the more researchers that do work in HIV/AIDS, maybe the better. But you're covering HIV/AIDS, so is HSRC, so is the Medical Council. Is there duplication, or are you working together with them? You are doing poverty and agriculture. So is the HSRC, so is the ARC, so is CSIR. Is there collaboration with at least one thing in mind, and that's the avoidance of duplication? Then finally, a very small question. Oh, and then you indicated that you monitor the impact that your work has on society. What measures do you use to monitor that impact? And then a very final short question. Who appoints your council? Thanks.
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The first question was posed by the Honorable Chairperson asking how do you rate with the CSIR. We have not had the kind of contact that are regarded as adequate. And there are a lot of institutional reasons for that. But we are of the opinion that Chibishano, as it is, or as part of, there's what GST calls the CEO's forum, where the CEOs of the science councils, which fall under the ambit of the GST, meet and their presentation, and they highlight the kind of initiatives that they are involved in. And I'm of the opinion that this kind of forum will enhance institutional collaboration, which I think is a problem, and it's not unique to South Africa. But I think this kind of forums where people realize that, you know, we are trying, CSR is pursuing the first South African car. Oh, Chibishano has some capacity in that area. Why don't we come together and collaborate? You can provide some tools. So I think that kind of forum will help. We can do much better in that regard. For the Department of Trade and Industry, one would be hard-pressed to believe that we are in the Department of Science and Technology. We have very lucrative and high-value collaborations with agencies within the DTI. We have a MOA, a three-year MOA with the IGC. We get projects through the SPI, which is a special program for industrial innovations, which are geared towards some of our technology stations. As I said, we are involved with the Technology for Women in Business within the GCI. We collaborate a lot with the South African Bureau of Standards, the Design Institute. I'm involved personally with some of the initiatives, which is also very nice input in terms of our national systems of innovation. And we are going forward. We would like to break down the CSIR roles which seems to exist between agencies. And the reason why it's quite straightforward. We see that it's the only way we can reduce duplication and enhance our footprint nationally. But we believe that we can do much, much better in that regard. The other question from the honourable members is the issue of impact. Some of the questions I'll try to answer as succinctly as possible. Chibishano's input is on technology. We, along with the SMEs, we identify the kind of technology needs that they have to enhance it. For example, over and above technology, we talk about technology intelligence. To inform the SMEs, what are the state-of-the-art technology inputs that they need to be competitive, to be innovative. At the end of the day, we have the opinion that the indirect benefit for society based on our input would be that this SMEs employ more people, they do all these kind of things. But at the end of the day, entrepreneur rules the rules. He's the one who has to make an understanding that, you know, look, it's better for him to employ more people to expand his business. So that kind of measurement, we'd like to see it going up, and we'd like to set a 100% target for SMEs employing more people, but it will boil down to the entrepreneur. Does he absorb our advice, and does he use it efficiently to employ more people? And the export market, the 10%, we are of the opinion that it's not just the 10%, but then also the quality of products that we export. We rather export platinum nanofibers rather than platinum metals. But that would be informed by how innovative the SME is, and that's where our input is. We are going to tell them about the state of the art. We have the opinion that we want to encourage them to export, because that's the only way they can address some of the issues which the Honorable Minister of Finance have raised. But Chibishano, along with our interactions with other agencies of government, we try to specify what our mandate is. That we find that SMEs, first we have to convince them that our solutions are to their great benefit. And once we have a buy-in from them, they start working with us. But the numbers that we are operating in is quite low. And the reason why is worldwide. It's not a uniquely South African thing. SMEs, unlike large companies, are very reluctant to interact with universities and, by definition, technology agencies. So the challenge that we face is how do we market our product, and how to make sure that the SMEs don't come to us in a moment of deep crisis. They come to us when they want to diversify their product portfolio. That is the challenge we are trying to address through a lot of initiatives. Export Africa, for example, we've been participating in for the past 3 years to highlight what Chibishano does to enhance
access of some of the companies while exhibiting there through the GTI, to know that, you know, look, although you are making profit now, there's no guarantee that a year from now you'll be profitable. Come to our technology station, let's see how we can actually improve the kind of product that we export to the global market. The key measurement that we have, for example, is, and then that's where we have a control over. We, our project managers, go to our technology stations, and they don't just listen to what the technology stations say, they help SMBs. They go to some of the SMBs, randomly. They'll go and say, well, what kind of involvement, what was the impact? How much did you pay if the subsidized scheme and other things? And those things are reported back to us, and it's a trend that we do, and then we'll report to the board and GST, and hence the portfolio committee.
The mismatch.
The mismatch, honorable member, is quite a concern for us. And I mentioned the issue over and above HR and technology, which are the obvious ones. It's just that we feel that we need, rather than one technology in automotive components, we probably need three. If you benchmark us against both developing and developed countries, some of these centers, in Germany they have over 272. In Korea they have more. In India they have more. And as you can, there's a direct correlation between this kind of initiatives and economic growth. The mismatch has to do with, firstly, our footprint, that we're not everywhere that we're needed. And it's a resource constraint. And also, some of the SMEs don't necessarily know what they want until such time that they're in trouble. And that mismatch, because all of a sudden our technology station managers have to leave whatever projects they're working on and dedicate a lot of resources to make sure that this SME doesn't lose that contract in the next three months. But for the better part of the year, the SME never even said to, you know, what kind of help can I get in times of, in good times? They only really seem to go there in bad times. And what it does is it removes most of our resources from some of the key projects to focus on saving this contract and saving South African jobs. So I think that's what I meant by this.
Thanks, Kevin.
Chairperson and honourable members, essentially the questions are very easy to answer. There's no duplication because we don't do research. We review evidence that has been published, weigh it from a multidisciplinary perspective, and to reach consensus between people from a wide variety of disciplines, areas, perspectives on what are the best ways to go forward. The HSRC, MRC, CSIR do research, and they are, of course, limited in their disciplinary perspective. So therefore, we have reached very natural agreements. The HSRC could not have done this study, nor the MRC, of nutrition, because it is so many disciplines of economics, etc. So no overlap, but there's close cooperation with them. We don't do anything they do. The second is the monitoring of impact. Every single project, when it's approved by the council, has a implementation plan and a dissemination plan and a review plan, so that after 3 years, all our reports are professionally evaluated to see what happened, what was done, how far did we get, what can we learn from that, so that there is an absolute inbuilt self-regulation, as well as external, because of our grants that we receive from our customers, if you like. And the council is appointed according to the Act, which was passed by Parliament, by the election of the members from their number of nominated people. The minister appoints the people who have been elected and nominates a member of the Mackey Council to be the 13th member of our council. So it is an elected council which serves for 2 years, and then there's a new election. And the details are in the Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blasi.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank Dr. Kevis for giving us that explanation, because my question to him was, you know, that there are certain areas we should probably be researching, but if they're not researching, then that question virtually falls away. But I'm a little perturbed at some of the things that are happening in South Africa, and especially in the research area. If we want to get to the phase where we have people like Professor Walter Marassus, who is an outstanding scientist, to materialize in South Africa, then there's something wrong with our teaching system, that we need to inspire students and learners to get to that level. And I come from a community where I've seen such people grow out of the community. Let me name them. Professor Walter Erasmus is one of them. Bill Fenker is another one. Swanepoel from Harmony Minds, and there are, you can carry on with a number of these people, world-renowned technologists or scientists. Is there something in our education system that needs to be addressed? Because if I look at these people that I've known over 20, 30, 40 years, and the community where they come from, then I can say it was due to the teachers in that region, because I also know many of the teachers, and they inspire the students, they inspire the learners to get to that point. And I would just like to know whether that isn't what we should be looking at. Mr. Chairman, my other question goes to Tumi Sama. Just last week, 2 weeks ago, we had Springbok Mania, World Cup Mania in South Africa. Everybody, I think, in South Africa now owns a green jersey and a Springbok flag. But if you look at the clothing and textile industry, it is going down. And then my question would be, isn't this something that we from Parliament should be addressing, that you might want to tell us that we should be addressing? Because if somebody sells a product with my flag on it, my country's flag on it, I want it to be known it is proudly South African, proudly manufactured in South Africa. And then if I put a green jersey over my head, I don't want to read Made in China on the back. And if I wave a flag, I don't want to know it's made in China. I want to make sure that our industry gets somewhere. Is there something that Tumisano has found, for instance, in the textile industry, that we as a parliament should address in this regard? Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Please go ahead. Let's start with Asaf this time.
Very quickly, this is what we will be looking at in the study of, in our very careful look at postgraduate study, how people get into that, how they are inspired and trained. The DST as a scheme of centers of excellence is aimed precisely at generating the next generation of Walter Morassos, etc. Because there you have the most outstanding teachers and examples. You give them resources to attract young students and to inspire them and build them and so on. And the research chairs, same idea. But what we'll be looking at is what happens in postgraduate study, how much of an influence does a supervisor or other top scholars have on those people. So we will be looking at it in detail, you can rest assured. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The decline in the clothing and textile industry is quite traumatic, and I'm of the opinion that government, through its government departments and agencies, have to find ways, and that focusing on things like promoting innovative South African clothing and textile products. It's not just textiles, but in textiles has an application in automotive components nowadays. They can add some of the OEMs to procure stitched leather goods from South African companies. And then those kind of things as part of the give and take incentives enshrined in MIGP and others. And but then also South African government agencies and government departments start procuring more from SMEs in clothing and textile industry and see what they have to offer rather than us procuring from other countries. And especially the niche high end market of clothing and textiles. I think there's a huge opportunity for us to keep the rents in South Africa rather than procure them from other countries. But also government can urge the large companies, the Woolworths of this world, to really focus on SME inputs from South Africa and other countries.
Is there some sort of blueprint to achieve what you're saying, or are these just ideas flying around?
I like to refer to it as an institutional framework where Tumisano, for example, is working in technology diffusion and transfer, including the textile industry. SIDA supports business support SMEs from the Department of Trade in terms of different. Productivity Institute in the Department of Labor is focusing on improved enhanced competitiveness in terms of productivity and other things. Those kind of inputs, government can request this agency to say, you know, look, what kind of input have you made? For example, have you have one of the SMEs that you're helping produce a nice textile product that we can distribute in government buildings? You know, I think those kind of things where the institutes which are supposed to be helping SMEs are brought to book in terms of exactly what kind of products can you exhibit in Parliament Hall. And it's small steps, but it's tangible things that you can do, rather than nuances about policy objectives. It's just yes, things you can do yesterday. That we can say that somebody's manufacturing the jackets for Lafarge Construction. The constructions which is happening around the 2010. We'd like Soka in South Africa to procure the white jackets from the black women who are manufacturing them in Cape Town. It's a huge order from them, but then you could make them sustainable. These are tangible things that can be done yesterday.
I think I'll leave it at that. But the other question is, what can we do? You say, all you're saying is that we should get all those MPI, the Department of Labor, with the CETAs, yourselves, to try and bring these ideas together. I think that's where the frustration is for some of us. Particularly, I'll come back to you, where all these things are located all over, and you can't get this institutional framework that says, for the reflective vests, for instance, these are the SMEs, MMEs that are doing them, and if you want to order, that we can say, be able to say, proudly South African, blah, 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 blah. We've lost an opportunity on the green t-shirts, for instance, the flags, because precisely everybody is doing their own thing. He was asking a specific question along those lines. Can I take Prof and come back to you with your last? I know that you've got the last one, we'll come back to you. Prof.
Thank you, Chair. I've basically got two questions for Tumisano and two for Esther, but I just want to say something very quickly about the clothing industry. We have destroyed it. I mean, we had relatives, mothers and sisters and so on, and the clothing industry in the Western Cape, that is dead, gone. And now let me come to the point I really want to make, is that on page 15, talk about the vision for the next 10 years. And you speak here, be one of the top three emerging economies of the global pharmaceutical industry based on an extensive innovation system based on indigenous knowledge. Now, really, do you mean that the pharmaceutical, it's on page 15, the first bullet point there, that pharmaceutical industry that we're building in South Africa will be based on indigenous knowledge and indigenous plants? I'm asking a question there. Point two I would like to ask is that the last bullet point there says, having met the 2040 Millennium Development Goals to halve poverty, I would really like to know what are you going to do to halve poverty, you see? Because I mean, I see a serious problem where I live in my constituency, not live where I work in my constituency. All right, that is as far as Tumisano goes. Except I had a number of questions, but I want to limit myself to two, and one I actually basically asked last year. If I look at your table on page 23, I look at the mathematical sciences, my recollection is that those figures I see, there are 13 men, one woman, and 9 whites and 5 blacks, and a total of 14 seems to be the same as the year before. But really, I mean, those are very sad figures, unless people don't want to join the SF. There is a problem there, you see. From what I understood, well, when I was teaching, you see, and I've said this before, I'll say it very quickly, when I was in a student in the class long ago, the vast majority of maths class were males, very few women. When I came back as a teacher, let's say, nearly 20 years later to which university, more than half of those were female, and the males were a minority. They had gone into computer science. And so therefore I find these kind of figures, you see, mathematical scientists, one woman comparison of 13 males, is very sad. The second question I was going to ask, I had a number of questions, I won't ask them. Let me see which is the one I really wanted to ask then. Sorry,
no, take your time.
I've got another question.
You give them some chance to think about your previous questions.
Yes, I was going to ask you, if you see, I've got a number of questions, I'm picking just one. What is ESSA's view of math school examinations? See, I have asked the department over and over, please give me your math papers, I like to see them. Either they're ashamed of it, but I've asked too often, and I've given up. I did get a couple of papers, but that's no good for me to assess from a teacher at school to see what has been done. And of course that teacher has selected the top questions out of the exam. If I don't see the top question, I want to see the mathematics paper. But I do visit the schools, you see, in my constituency. And I can tell you from what I talk there to students, I ask always, can I talk a little bit of mathematics geometry class? And I'll explain to them just simply for instance the shape of a car's lens, why? And they are totally flummoxed by this. I mean, they've never really understood anything like this. It seems the teachers don't tell them anything like that. Anyhow, I'm saying I get the impression, maybe very wrongly looking just at my constituency, that the mathematics is in a sad state. And I cannot believe that the Deputy Minister of Education says, can over and over send you these exam papers. But it's just across the road here. They never reach me. And then I ask again, but I stop asking. And now those are the two questions. I stretched them out a little bit, but let's leave it at that.
Let me start with the DST for a change. Why don't you give Prof the papers?
I think the question is being asked the wrong department.
But why can't you coordinate?
That's a very short question.
Why can't you coordinate? Can I give you a mandate to discuss with the colleagues in the deals in the department and give Prof the papers? We don't have oversight.
Maybe let me suggest this. There's a community of portfolio committees. There's a portfolio committee on education. So bear your influence on them. So that they can bear an influence.
You're refusing.
No, I'm not refusing.
That is fine.
Can I just address the questions to the Minister, Deputy Minister of Education?
Oh, okay. Oh, no, I thought that you asked the DSP to facilitate. But clearly they're refusing. They're saying, no, you must go there. Anyway, let's take Asaf. And come to some discussion.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honourable Professor. The position, the good news is that in the election this year, of the 18 new candidates, 6 are mathematicians, and of those, 3 are women. So there will be a material improvement, and we have focused, as I said, on trying to get nominations in these sectors. So that should improve a great deal. We do take it very seriously, and mathematics is always included in what we consider to be science and technology and scholarship. The second is that we are considering, and Dr. Marty was very much concerned with this, setting up a standing committee on enhancement of science and maths education, which would we would offer this as a place to look very carefully at what actually is the problem. It's always been mentioned that despite all the efforts, one has this apparently very poor showing in international comparative testing and so on. To get to the bottom of that, what is the problem, and to be able to provide solutions. So we do take it seriously, and we will look at it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. The questions, the issues which the Honourable Member raised
is informed by the DST innovation strategy for the next 10 years. I think they've highlighted four grand challenges. I don't know if my colleagues from the DST would like to enlighten the committee on exactly, for example, the issue of pharmaceutical, the concept from pharma to pharma have been raised as part of GST's grand challenges. And I think that's where the inputs came from.
No, this one, we heard that before. We don't go to travel the route again.
Okay.
I'm denying them that opportunity. They presented this format to pharma in their last presentation.
I think that's what informs the inputs from GST in our annual report.
So you're not able to defend that?
We ask our, you know, not only for the bulk of it that we need to pay, but then we also ask our stakeholders to give a much broader view of where they are going in terms of the bigger issues. Chimichanga just okay a small niche in the bigger scheme of things within GST. But I don't know if my colleagues would like to make input.
No, they did make that. I think the only thing is that if you're saying to us that part of your report is basically informed by what others are doing, then you don't have to make it too thick. Just confine yourself to what you're doing, so that they can defend their story in their reports. Then you don't have to make it fat if you can defend the fact. Okay. Does it apply to the poverty issue as well?
Yeah, Honorable Chairperson, where. Just if we have to remove them, it's just 3 pages. But we, Chimichanga, looked at what GST does, and then we orientate some of our key, for example, the issue of the beneficiation of platinum group metals, the so-called hydrogen economy. Where Chimichanga makes an impact is in fabrication of whatever products need in that particular area. In terms of poverty alleviation, our footprint in underserved provinces like Limpopo, where we look at specifically at poor rural areas and how we can enhance the expertise there, I think address the issue of poverty reduction and elimination. And we are mindful of the minimum goals, developmental goals, that unless those things are achieved, and that's where inputs of even small entities like Chimichanga are critical, that if you don't develop high growth SMEs, then we are not going to reduce unemployment, and ergo, we are not going to reduce poverty. So our input is indirectly through the development of world-class SMEs, who over the course of time not only pay taxes, but they can also create much-needed jobs in the critical areas of the country.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank
you. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentations. They were quite exciting. Short questions, Chimichanga. To what extent are people with disabilities involved in your SMMEs? And you also told us that you are working towards the waste management and working with water as well, with Water Commission as well. With these problems that keep happening in areas like Delmas, what's your take on that one? And can you give us your physical address so that we give it to our constituencies so that they're able to talk with you? Asaf, we've been having briefings from other councils, and they were having quite a lot of problems, even the problem of courage. When they were having meetings, do you experience that in your council? And you provided recommendations or a book of recommendations. What's the take of GST on your recommendations? Are they interrogating those recommendations so that they can be made useful to the government? And finally, Indigenous publishing, how is it going? Is it taken? Is it moving? And last short question, Chair. You've spoken about the MDGs. From your view, your point of view, do you think we are online to reaching the MDGs or almost reaching the MDGs by 2014 so that by 2015 things are beginning to reverse? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable
member raised the issue of the involvement of people with disabilities, not just, I think I also extend the issue, not just with our SMEs that we assist, but then also employment for people with disabilities at our centers. Honorable member, we can do much better. We are not doing enough, and I'll be as brutally frank as I can. The issue was also raised by the GST and the minister that in terms of our KPI, we have nothing to write home about. But we are of the opinion that some of the SMEs that we help, we have to focus on those also, especially in rural areas, who are focusing on employing people with disabilities. In terms of skills upgrade, it has to go across the board. We have the opinion that as we go forward and report to the committee, the members can raise the issue as exactly what have you done relative to last year, because I think the time of excuses is long past. But we are doing all we can. We're encouraging our administration to employ even internships with people with disabilities with the belief that we can make a much shorter difference. But our SMEs also have to be guided, have to be informed by, we'll give you incentives for those who are employing people with disabilities. We can do much better, but we have nothing of pride to report to the committee at the moment. We are not doing well. The other issue is which is so germane to this council, always there is the issue that how can we take pride that we have world-class universities and institutions, but we have people in Burma who don't have access to potable water. And the issue at hand is our technology stations, be it in automotives, be it in electronics, in rapid prototyping, can look at innovative ways to manufacture filtering systems for rural communities and collaborate with SABS to reduce the cost to get them tested and stuff, because I think it's an outrage, it's a mismatch. The institutions of higher learning can do much better in terms of addressing the needs of the poor of the poor in our country. Our technology station industry and chemicals is looking at the high end and also key societal issues. I mean, they're looking at ways of new ways to purify water at source. You know, whether it's in portable microwave generators and those kind of things. But obviously they can do much better. And I think the issue of maybe they have to accelerate their development, they have to work more closely with the Water Commission, with the Water Research Commission. Because it should not be a niche area in our case. It should be something which could have direct impact. And that's where also the linkages with SABS in terms of quality improvement can help. One of the key things that we've done in the past, and do the whole controversy with the panda paraffin stove, with our administration in Bloemfontein has worked with an individual who has produced a very safe and high quality stove, which unfortunately the industry has not adopted. But I'm glad to see that SABS is cracking down on the panda paraffin stove which are in the market. We've helped develop a high quality paraffin stove which, if it goes to the market and is adopted by people, it will probably reduce the fire that you see, which costs an unnecessary lot of money. So there's a social development element with Chimichano, and it's something which I personally take to that.
Thanks. You know, the reason why I was pressing this, I was seeing that you go to town on the paraffin stove. So I had to say yes, yes, it's good. You're doing good work. But you see that we're concentrating on areas that we don't think you're doing that good. Okay. Academy.
Chairperson and honourable member, the answers are that the council in the last 2 years has always had a quorum. It is difficult to have a full attendance, but we have always had a quorum, which is more than half of the members. All members have ever participated by putting their inputs by email and so on. The second is that our recommendations, for example, on this report, we have had two meetings of a full interrogation with the Department of Science and Technology staff and senior management, as well as the Department of Education. So we invite and ask to be heard and to explain what we would think is the best thing to do. Other examples are not at the moment. I'm still struggling to get the Department of Health, for example, to invite us to present this report and the recommendations. We've offered to do it. We have tried to make sure that the new National Health Research Committee considers the report, and we will not rest until the Department has engaged fully with this. Lastly, The MDGs, the first ASADI conference, which Dr. Marty referred to, was held on what the role of science academies in being able to help nations reach their MDGs, the Millennium Development Goals. To some extent, we would echo what the chairperson has said, that the coordination of the analysis of the problem and the assignment to the best player, in a sense, to try to solve it, is one of our main points. Those people who wrote, for example, the South African response to the MDG, halfway mark, if you like, have they referred to a certain issue that we can look at for them? Then we welcome that. We have not received any such requests yet, but we would very much like to. Thank you.
Thanks. I can see that members are hungry now. It's popular behind me. We're going to break it now in the next 10 minutes for lunch. Lunch will be served over here and we're all invited, just behind us, in the restaurant. I'm going to take Mr. Blanchet, but you know, you earlier threatened to raise questions related to research and you didn't. Because Asaf said up front that, that they are not doing research, but they are just doing a review of for some work done. I would like you to raise those questions so that at least we know what you had in your mind and your last question that you wanted to raise.
Mr. Chairman, no, my question is not to any of the two entities. My question is to our committee, because we hear this year after year. We see the deterioration of the textile industry and other industries, and I believe that we should sit down with our department and look at some of the problems that are experienced out there. And as I've been said, maybe we should prohibit people from putting our flag onto their textiles if that is not manufactured locally. But there are certain things that we need to address because we hear it, and we just say, put it in the report, and it gets far.
So, what's your residential address, Bob? You can leave it with us here. All right, can we deal with that later? Just ensure that we've got something that we can send to the constituencies. All right. Shumisano raised a very important matter when we started. Basically along the lines that we've got to try and meet the needs of a developmental state. And I think that has been part of the frustration that I sensed in the committee, that the science councils and the research institutions are coming here to tell us about all the good things that they are doing. You see? But the major thing that deals with poverty eradication, that deals with the basic needs, sometimes you find them wanting. All of us are trying to compete internationally. We're trying to address the needs of the first economy, so-called, so to speak. But when it comes to the basics, that's where we found wanting. I'm not sure how we're going to address this matter. You go to the municipalities, you see that the water quality is also deteriorating in many of them. I don't want to mention the extreme example of Delmar that was given and your response to that. Poverty alleviations, you've got programs that were started long ago, some of them collapsed. You see? And it's like, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to all of us here. We basically also like cherry picking. And I think at some point we'll have to come back and say, listen, what are the priorities for the states that the science councils will have to address? We raised the question, for instance, of housing. To say we've made a lot of mistakes in 94. We said we're going to build 1 million houses in 94. That was a political policy statement. And yes, we did, you see. But if you look into the quality of those houses, Abu Gazinya, and some of the contractors who have duty, fly by night and so on, we've said, what is the house or the home that we've got to build for a South African family? Everybody's still doing research. You see? CSIR has told us that, no, we are there, we just have to start implementing. But it's 13 years down the line. At least you should have left us to make these political mistakes for 10 years. We shouldn't come back for the next 10 years and continue with the next, with the same things. Making that example. You're doing good work. We're not taking it away from you. But let's try and also, in that good work, address the issues of poverty that were raised, that are raised. Have we ever measured, Dr. Blanchet, Mr. Blanchet, sorry, you can still do your PhD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You see, you raised a very important matter the last time when we just discussed among ourselves. To say in the 30s we had the Carnegie Commission, for instance, to just try and look into the poor white problem in South Africa. And they came with a clearer scientific analysis and some progress to deal with that. When we came into this new South Africa, I don't recall myself that we've done a proper analysis, even of the infrastructure itself, as to whether it will be able to carry the 4x4s of Mosantebe and all, as to they come to, you know, those type of things. Traffic congestion, one plane got stuck here in Cape Town, the whole system collapsed. Just transport infrastructure, to give you an example. You see, but just in broad, are we able to say this is our poverty level in South Africa? And if we say to have it, this is our target. This is what we want to say. Well, it's just a general political statement. Have we done the research to deal with poverty? Unemployment. In 1998, we went through a presidential job summit, and we were all excited that day. We're breaking the back of the scandal. It's still with us today. So I don't know whether the politicians are leading the researchers or the researchers are impacting in what we're doing. We can make all sorts of statements. But if we don't have research or review of some of the activities that we're doing, then I'm telling you that we're going to be chasing our tails for a very long time. Professor Giver, or Giver, whatever, she asked me to say it in Afrikaans. It's given. The Christians are very excited. Alright, we would want you to leave some of your publications and things with us and to ensure that you send those letters to us. The matter of HIV/AIDS is a real issue. The question of crime in the country is a problem. I'm not sure whether like the impact of the integration of racial integration in society has been able to be reviewed, to be looked into, to be researched properly. When you look into the town planning, one of the problem areas in our country, you see that if we say townships are still expanding in the same old manner, closing the gaps, there is no proper integration that you see. The integration that you see is those who climb up, who come into the middle class, are buying their houses, maybe in Fenton or wherever, you know, in Cape Town, CBD, and so on. But those who can't reach that remain in Gooks and Kailicha, and it's still the same. So please, just an appeal to say, let's try and deal with the real issues of our new South Africa as well as we're doing our scientific review and research. But I want to thank you very much. Prof, don't give up on asking for